from Colorado School of Mines, Jennifer Teerlink. She's going to talk about trace organic chemicals in septic systems.
Great. Thank you. As Gurpal said, I'm from Colorado School of Mines, and I just would like to quickly acknowledge my co-authors here. So what are trace organic chemicals? First off, they go by a whole bunch of different names. You may have heard emerging contaminants, personal care products, that sort of thing. But today I'm going to call them by TORCs. And this can, the reason I like trace organic chemicals is it's inclusive of all sorts of classes. So the typical ones that we think of often are both prescription drugs and over-the-counter drugs. On the left, we have a child who's in flame-retardant pajamas. That's a one that we look at. A stimulant of caffeine most of us have probably had today. We have pesticides that can be applied to our food and then consumed, and then additives to personal care products like sunscreen. So if we think about an on-site system and where we would use all of these different products, oh, and I guess also I meant to say that the main entryway for all of these compounds to the environment is through wastewater. And particularly in the case of drugs, yes, you can dump your drugs down the toilet, but you also pass through many of these compounds into the wastewater system. So it's not just from dumping down the drain. So if we think about, you know, a shower, you're using shampoos that probably have additives. In the kitchen, you're using various chemicals. But all of these are going to end up in a wastewater system. One point I want to make is that in on-site wastewater systems, the compounds in any particular system are going to vary widely depending upon who's there. If it's an older family or a couple, they're going to be using a lot different drugs than, let's say, a young family. So on the note of variability, this is from some work that I've done comparing the variability of trace organic chemicals between a clustered system represented here in red, and this is a Boulder, which is about 100,000 people, compared to an on-site system that is clustered, about 400 people, and then an individual septic tank that's serving just 16 users. And across the bottom, I have some compounds here. You're probably familiar with caffeine and triclosan. Methylparaben is an additive to food as a preservative often, and oxybenzone is in sunscreens and that sort of thing. But really, the take-home message is that the variability is much greater in the smaller systems. And this is largely due to the smaller conveyance system, and so there's much less retention time in mixing. And it's also worth noting that this variability of trace organics is much, much higher than even the variability of typical contaminants like nitrogen in these systems. So we've seen this several times, or this type of thing, but wastewater is collected into a septic tank, and here there's, and the septic tank is largely anaerobic, and there's an option for advanced treatment, but ultimately the septic tank effluent enters the soil treatment unit. And this is going to be the most important place for attenuation of trace organic chemicals. And the two main pathways or main processes by which compounds can be removed is either through sorption or biotransformation as the water percolates through the soil. Let's see, what else did I want to add here? Okay, so if we look at this, the water moving through, we have, as I mentioned, anaerobic septic tank effluent entering the soil, and it infiltrates down through. And this is often, as we've heard, applied in doses. So as the water drains out of the soil, this gives an opportunity for oxygen to enter the system. And this is really important because for trace organic chemicals, what we've learned in the past decade or so is that many of them prefer aerobic conditions for transformation. So this kind of resting time between doses is really important. So ultimately, this water enters the groundwater and makes its way either to surface water or drinking water wells. And as you all know, in communities that rely on on-site wastewater treatment, they often rely on drinking water wells. So this provides the who cares. The verdict or the jury is still out on a lot of these compounds and what their impact is, but we know, for example, that things like bisphenol A have an endocrine disrupting effect, and so that can have some big impacts to surface water and aquatic life there. And drinking water, you know, what's the effect of having really low dose of antibiotics? We're still not sure on that. So in addition, the as the septic tank effluent infiltrates, as we've seen in a few talks, and as Ken also showed in his work, there is a biomat that forms, and it's mostly in this first 30 centimeters. This graph is showing some measurements made by Tanya Rao, also from Colorado School of Mines, in which she did some phospholipid extractions to show that biomass decreases with depth. So the important part for me is that this first 30 centimeters is really what's most important for torque attenuation. If I'm interested in biotransformation and sorption, that's where it's primarily going to take place. So if we're interested in helping these little kids who are drinking from this well or the aquatic life that's connected to the groundwater, what do I want to look at? We wanted to develop an understanding of how torque behavior upon initial infiltration. We wanted to do this by looking at different hydraulic loading rates, because this is an easily alterable parameter. We wanted to look at temporal changes from startup, but I did not want to look at variability. In the slide that I showed before, the concentrations can vary by as much as four orders of magnitude at a single source in a single day. And so that makes it very difficult to say anything definitive about what's happening in the system, because what water packet are you looking at? So to remove variability, I looked at bench scale, and I also want to mention that using advanced trace organic analysis, I'll talk a little bit more in a minute about that. So for loading rates, I looked at between 1 and 30 centimeters per day. 30 centimeters per day is really, really high, but we want to see what happened at that high end. And as I mentioned, just the first 30 centimeters, we wanted to look at initial infiltration. I packed these columns with the sand, and I used triplicate columns per loading rate. And initially, to get the right microbes in there, I seeded with raw wastewater, and then continued to feed the system with synthetic wastewater and spiked 16 different trace organic chemicals, in each of these at relevant concentrations. And then delivered these in four doses per day. So here are some of the analytical methods used. I'll take a minute here to talk about the torque measurements. We're able, with liquid chromatography and tandem mass spec, to get down to the nanogram per liter range. So that's about six orders of magnitude lower than typical contaminants. Also really important is that we use isotope dilution. What that means is that an isotope labeled compound that is matched to each analyte in our analyte list is added to the sample so that we can see if there's any losses during sample preparation or matrix suppression, so that we get a really accurate read. And this is particularly important in septic tank effluent that has a really, really rich matrix. So we've heard a lot about nitrogen today. I limited my nitrogen world to ammonia and nitrate, and this is mostly because they're the two dominant species, but also because we just wanted to have verification that these columns were performing as you could expect in the field. So here we have nitrogen concentration on the y-axis and loading rate on the x-axis. And the error bars represent all samples from day 60 on in experiments, and each experiment ran for at least 90 days. So the take-home message here is that we had nitrification at all loading rates. Denitrification, there wasn't much, and this we wouldn't expect much because it's just a sand that's going to drain readily and not develop anaerobic microsites. Also important is that at each loading rate tested, we had about 95% DOC removal, which correlates well with field work. So here's a temporal trend. This is for 4 centimeters per day. Let's walk through this here. The nitrate influent, as you'd expect, is effectively zero, and the ammonia influent is around 25. And the important message here is that it took about 20 days for full nitrification to develop, so for the bugs to grow and transform the nitrogen species. The error bars represent column triplicates. So how do we do with torque attenuation? This is a subset of 11 torques that I looked at. So the compounds are listed with their uses. I've also listed the average influent concentrations. So this, as I mentioned before, reflects actual concentrations measured in on-site systems. So, for example, caffeine is much, much higher than something like hydrocodone, which is a prescription drug. The percent removal shows how well across all five loading rates we did. And so these are binned into well, intermediate, and poorly removed compounds. This actually correlates quite well with a conventional activated sludge system. So an STU does almost as well, and in some cases better, than a conventional activated sludge system. If we look at how these varied by loading rate, so here we have loading rate on the x-axis and the removal efficiency. Some compounds, like carbamazepine, which is an anticonvulsant, and sulfamethoxazole, which is an antibiotic, they didn't change much with loading rate. So they're either, in the case of carbamazepine, it just doesn't really go away, and sulfamethoxazole, we get about half of it. But with some of the better removed compounds, like cimetidine and acetaminophen is just an anti-inflammatory drug, there is a strong correlation with loading rates. So we see at those high loading rates, they are not as effectively removed. So next I want to go into some of the temporal changes that we saw throughout these experiments. And I'm going to talk about the microbial adaption, oxygen upsets, and sorption. So this is a plot showing TCPP, and we have concentration on the y-axis and time on the x-axis. Again, the arrow bars represent column triplicates. And you can see that over time, TCPP is removed from the system. A reminder of when complete nitrification occurred, this was about 20 days. So this doesn't seem to correlate just with development of the biocommunity, but rather the microbes are adapting to be able to handle TCPP. So that's good news. However, as I mentioned, these compounds were highly variable. So this system benefited from a consistent influent quality. So this benefit may not be realized in a field system that was either seeing variable concentrations of TCPP or intermittent. So next I want to look at oxygen upset. We all know that in order for ammonia to be converted to nitrate, oxygen needs to be present. But in the case of many torques, we also know that these are oxidative reactions indicated here by the loss of electrons. I also wanted to note on this slide that, you know, here we're just talking about acetaminophen or whatever torque is important, and that's what we're measuring. There's a large body of work that's trying to ask the question, you know, what about these transformation byproducts? You know, these aren't being completely mineralized, so, you know, are we worried about those daughter products? And I'm not going to go into that today, but it's something to think about. So in one of my columns, the biomat seals completely against the column sides, preventing any oxygen from entering the column. We knew this just from visual observation and also a spike in the ammonia concentrations. Here on these graphs, all of the concentrations are normalized to influent, so that they can be plotted on the same graph. So although this wasn't great for reproducibility, it did tell us something about the behavior of these compounds when there isn't oxygen present. So correlating with this ammonia spike, we also had increases in acetaminophen and cimetidine, which was not reflected in the two other duplicates. So this is important to keep in mind, and you know we talk about these failing systems. Oftentimes, that can be if there's oxygen is unable to enter the system, and this also has implications to torques. So finally, with this temporal trends, we're going to talk a little bit about sorption. Sorption, we oftentimes with trace organic chemicals simplify it down to the fraction of organic carbon, because those often are is the component of soil which provides sites for sorption. So this picture that I have here is a core from a soil treatment unit, and like we talked about that first few centimeters, there's a high increase in biomass. So if I wanted to look at at sorption and see what the specific contribution of sorption is, it would make sense to run an abiotic column. However, in this case, we have such a large contribution of organic carbon from the microbial community that's growing there that it wouldn't be representative of an entire STU, but rather just the sorption sites available on the media. Point being, it's just very difficult to separate out what is sorption and what is biotransformation experimentally. So here are some results for hydrocodone. And here, again, is where nitrification is complete. And you can see that about day 40, day 50, there seems to be some breakthrough. So I'm interpreting this as sorption. I see this behavior in each of the experiment. And then it doesn't break through to influent concentrations, so this suggests that there's also some biotransformation of this compound. And this brings about an important point. If torques are sorbed in the system, that provides more time that microbes may be able to biotransform. In conclusion, torque attenuation is compound specific, and these compound specific classes are across many different types of wastewater treatment. And in some cases, it is loading rate specific. So at the highest overall loading rates, at the lowest loading rate, we see the highest removal rates. Attenuation of some torque is sensitive to oxygen availability. So operation design should allow for oxygen diffusion into the system. Attenuation of some torque may improve over time, but additional work is necessary to really understand the attenuation of torque through sorption in STUs. Acknowledgements, I'd like to thank Gurpal for organizing this session, as well as Water and Fire WRF for supporting some of this work. In the upper right-hand corner is Virtu. She came and did a lot of this experimental work with me. She works at the Madrid Institute for Advanced Studies in Water, and also many of my colleagues in Aquatech Group. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions. Yeah?
How much variability do you find in your different soil replicants?
So that depends on compound. So I don't know if we can go back. That might be too complicated. But for many of the compounds, it wasn't much different. But for example, cimetidine went from 13% removal to 99% removal. So it depends.